in their own hands. Like 30 young people were killed in Palestine by Israel just in the month of January, and the month is not yet finished. So put yourself in the position of a young Palestinian. They have to fight back, and the only way is by armed resistance.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end it. We're fresh out of time. Arnold August there, author and journalist from Montreal. Thank you. And Fry Hughes, author and director of the Palestine Aid Belfast from Belfast. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For Mika Batakwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائق خسائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return. So He will inform you of that in which you differed, and He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign minister says the country has always stood against the United States' excessive demands and has made great advances despite the sanctions. Defying international outcry, Israel approves plans for the construction of over 8,000 new settler units in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Also ahead, U.S. Muslim lawmaker Ilhan Omar vows not to remain silent after House Republicans oust her from a high-profile committee over, quote, anti-Semitic remarks. Our top story, Iran's foreign minister says the Iranian nation has relentlessly stood against the United States' excessive demands and has made great advances. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a meeting with the Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega in the capital city of Managua. Amir Abdullahian added that the sanctions imposed on Iran by the U.S. have made big problems for his country. However, he said Iran now stands among developed countries by relying on its domestic capacities in various fields. Ortega, for his part, said the enemies of global peace still continue their imperialist policies. He added that they want to turn the entire world into their backyard and have committed numerous crimes in the name of democracy. Amir Abdullahian has now departed for Venezuela on the next leg of his Central and South America's tours. Iran has put on display dozens of domestically made nuclear equipment and products. The exhibition was attended by top nuclear scientists and Iran's nuclear chief. Yusuf Jalali reports.
The 53rd exhibition of Iran's nuclear industry achievements was inaugurated in Tehran on Thursday The event showcases the latest nuclear products made in Iran. Attended by head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami, the expo put on display different applications of the nuclear sector, from centrifuges to radiopharmaceuticals and particle accelerators.
Despite all external pressures, we have managed to advance our nuclear sector, and this expo shows a small part of it. Today, we have become self-sufficient in nuclear fuel, radiomedicine, and many other fields such as heavy water.
In recent years, Iran has been trying to diversify the applications of its nuclear sector. Besides power generation, the country is now focusing on particle accelerators for food irradiation and radiotherapy.
Irradiation systems are being built in Iran on a national scale. This will allow the country to irradiate all its food and agricultural products. This way, we can reduce food waste, ensure food security for our people, and enhance our agricultural exports.
Since Iran indigenized its nuclear industry in 2006, it has constantly been targeted by sanctions over what the West calls fears of a nuclear bomb, something which Tehran categorically rejects, saying its nuclear program is civilian and peaceful.
As you know, the West has long been leading a psychological campaign against Iran's nuclear activity, accusing Iran of pursuing non-peaceful purposes. So we held this exhibition for our people to see for themselves that our nuclear program is peaceful.
Following the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 deal and reinstatement of sanctions against Tehran in 2018, Iran took retaliatory steps by scaling back its commitments to the pact. The Vienna discussions between Iran and the remaining parties to the 2015 deal, which aimed to revive the accord, have remained stalled since August last year. This, as Tehran says, it will come back to full compliance only if Washington removes all its sanctions.
By displaying these nuclear products, Iran tries to show the West that sanctions cannot disrupt its nuclear program. At the same time, the AEOI says it will continue to build up the country's nuclear industry even beyond the JCPOA limits, if sanctions are not removed. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The 1979 Islamic Revolution was meant to fulfill a long-cherished desire of independence for Iranians who had suffered decades of subjugation and domination by a monarchical rule with its nexus with some foreign powers. And one of the revolution's main promises was to keep the country away from all forms of dependence, either on the West or the East. The following report gives you an insight into the accomplishment of the Islamic Revolution and how it transformed Iranian society.
Neither East nor West, Islamic Republic. This famous slogan summarizes Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution and the people's fervent opposition to Cold War rivals, the United States and the Soviet Union, the two powers that then polarized the world sharply along the East-West divide. The slogan, which later became the Iranian foreign policy motto, was inspired by the ideas of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, who blamed the two powers for many problems faced by Iran and the Islamic world. He believed Muslims should reject the influence of both capitalism and communism. At the onset of the Islamic Revolution, many Iranians were tired of exploitation that culminated into Iran's losing big chunks of its territory to other countries. Therefore, the revolution kindled their hopes of independence and liberty. Iran's occupation by British and Russian empires in two world wars and the country's economic exploitation, directly or indirectly, were still fresh in the collective memory of Iranians. Also etched into people's psyche was how the US and Britain engrossed their democratic aspirations in 1953 by orchestrating a coup against a popular government and returning the autocratic Shah to the throne. That coup consolidated the West's imperialistic agenda over Iran for a quarter of a century. In the 1970s, the Pahlavi regime was cheered by then-US President Richard Nixon as one of, quote, America's cops on the beat in the Middle East for helping steer the oil-rich region away from the Soviet influence. In those days, the Pahlavi regime even obeyed the U.S. request to support its much-criticized war in Vietnam, sending warplanes, hosting American forces, and refueling warplanes. Henry Kissinger, the U.S. Secretary of State under Nixon, admitted following the 1979 revolution that the Shah never failed to stand by the U.S. He described him as a man whom seven American presidents had lauded as a loyal ally. It was certainly a big blow for Washington to see the Shah ousted. The newly established Islamic Republic viewed both the U.S. and the Soviet Union as miscellaneous forces in international politics. The U.S. was referred to as the Great Satan, since it was the main backer of the Shah and posed the most immediate danger to the revolution. And the Soviet Union was regarded as the lesser Satan, since it was not seen as closely involved with the Iranian monarchy as the U.S. The most dramatic symbol of the revolutionary determination to assert independence was the seizure of the American embassy in Tehran in November 1979 by a number of students. Angered by the U.S. admission of Shah, they asked Washington to hand over the former despot, a request that was never met. Iran's relations with the Soviet Union and its allies were tense as well, although at a low intensity. Tehran was opposed to numerous Soviet international policies, particularly its invasion of Afghanistan. In 1988, Imam Khomeini sent a letter to then-Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev warning him of an immediate danger. That letter has gone down in history as insightful and prophetic, from the leader of an independent nation to a superpower.
If you hope at this juncture to solve the economic problems of socialism and communism by appealing to the centers of the Western capitalism, you will, far from remedying any ill of your society, commit a mistake which those to come will have to erase.
The post-revolutionary Iran has now consolidated itself regionally and globally, forming warm relations with independent countries across the board. With the disintegration of the Soviet Union, Iran also pursued a look to the East policy, engaging in close collaboration with Russia and China. The independent Iran is now being regarded as a power that has contributed a lot to make the West Asian region more stable and peaceful. One such instance is Iran's role in defeating Daesh terrorism in Iraq, Syria, and beyond. Undoubtedly, Iran's Islamic Revolution was one of the biggest social upheavals of the 20th century. Imam Khomeini's words still resonate, and his powerful ideas of liberation from imperialistic domination, independence in domestic and foreign affairs, as well as call for embracing social justice and harmony, continue to inspire not only Iranians, but people in the region and beyond.
Now, defying international outcry, Israel has approved plans to build about 1,200 settler units in the occupied city of Al-Quds. The regime has endorsed two plans to build housing units and other structures for commercial and public purposes for Israeli settlers. The new structures will be built in six neighborhoods and settlements. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has slammed the regime's settlement plans as a crime and an attempt to change the status quo in Al-Quds. The movement said such Judaization projects will never legitimize the Israeli occupation. It added that Palestinians will continue to resist Israel's colonial plans until they liberate their ancestral land. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Meanwhile, some 120 Palestinian prisoners have staged a hunger strike in Israeli jails. They are protesting the inhumane prison circumstances in the Negev Desert. Human rights groups have repeatedly expressed concern over the treatment of Palestinians in Israeli detention centers. And Palestinians have had no choice but to go on hunger strike to raise awareness about the violation of their basic rights in Israeli jails.
Thank you. The harsh treatment of the Israeli regime against Palestinian prisoners is continuing unabated. At least 120 Palestinian inmates in an Israeli jail are on hunger strike in protest against the regime's repressive measures. The Palestinian Prisoners' Society has said the Palestinian political prisoners started the mass strike to protest against the inhumane conditions at Israel's notorious Negev prison.
Ben-Gavir announced plans to implement several punitive measures against incarcerated Palestinians, and he's continuing with more aggressive decisions. These measures are meant to drag the Palestinian prisoners into confrontations with the soldiers.
The commission said the inmates announced their decision to launch a hunger strike in response to the new repressive measures imposed on them by Israeli prison authorities. The development came after Israeli forces stormed several sections in Megiddo, Ofer, and Negev Desert prisons, attacking Palestinian prisoners and placing a group of them in solitary confinement. The Palestinian resistance factions have warned that the tension in prisons will not stay within their walls. They say harming the prisoners will have repercussions within and outside Israeli prisons.
The vicious attack on the prisoners will lead to serious consequences. The prisoners are not alone. They always find support and serious stand from the whole Palestinians. It seems this current regime wants a war on all fronts because the situation in the occupied territories is already boiling.
Reports say the move is in response to the abuses suffered by inmates in Section 26 and 27 in the Negev, the transfer of others from Section 8 to Section 6 in the same prison, and depriving them of their possessions and basic needs.
While Palestinians' prisoners are routinely subject to systematic torture by the Israeli regime, most of the inmates are held in Israeli prisons without a charge or trial. The practice is known as administrative detention, in which Israel keeps the detainees without a charge for up to 6 months, and the period can be extended an infinite number of times.
Hundreds of Palestinian prisoners are held under administrative detention, in which Israel keeps the detainees without charge for up to 6 months, a period which can be extended an infinite number of times. The detention takes place on orders from a military commander and on the basis of what the Israeli regime describes as secret evidence. Some prisoners have been held in administrative detention for up to 11 years. Rights groups describe Israel's use of administrative detention as a bankrupt tactic and have long called on Israel to end this move.
The decisions of the Israeli cabinet are only about using much more violence, fierce violence against Palestinian people, and about consolidating the system of racial discrimination and occupation. Their decisions will not change much and will not break the Palestinian resistance. And in my opinion, this government is failing and will continue to fail because fascism cannot prevail, and nobody can break the will of the Palestinian people to struggle to be free.
There are reportedly more than 7,000 Palestinians held in Israeli jails. Human rights organizations say Israel violates all the rights and freedoms granted to prisoners by the 4th Geneva Convention. Palestinian detainees have continuously resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express outrage at the illegal detentions. Israeli jail authorities keep Palestinian prisoners under deplorable conditions without proper hygienic standards. Palestinian inmates have also been subject to systematic torture, harassment, and repression.
Moving on, U.S. House Republicans have voted to oust the Muslim lawmaker Ilhan Omar from a high-profile committee accusing her of making, quote, anti-Semitic remarks. Omar, a Democrat, lost her position as a member of the House's Foreign Affairs Committee through a narrow margin vote of 218 to 211. The Republicans based their decision to oust her on Omar's 2019 remarks in a tweet for which she had later apologized. In that tweet, she suggested that Israel's supporters in U.S. politics were motivated by money rather than principle. In an address to the session, Omar said there was still bias in the U.S. on the basis of people's original geographical location, religion, or skin tone.
There is this idea that you are a suspect if you are an immigrant, or if you are from certain parts of the world, or a certain skin tone, or a Muslim.
House Democrats believed the ousting of Omar was revenge for removing two Republicans from committee assignments 2 years ago. They accused the Republicans of ignoring anti-Semitic comments from their own members. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries said Omar's ouster was not about accountability for her past remarks, but it was about political revenge. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
On Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets and thy messengers whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Islamic Revolution and Belief in the Savior. Dear listeners, these days marks the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. The triumph of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in February of 1979 strengthened considerably the belief in the coming of the Redeemer of mankind, as the movement of Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, was indeed a ray of that great revolution, which will definitely take place in the end time to exterminate all vestiges of oppression and corruption. Thus, in the fourth episode of this special series, we're going to speak about the significance of the Islamic Revolution as a prelude for Imam Mahdi's reappearance. Please stay with us. On 11th of February 1979, Iran's Islamic Revolution triumphed under the leadership of Imam Khomeini. The unmatched leadership of the Imam and the struggles of the Iranian nation bore fruit. Imam Khomeini announced clearly, "The Iranian People's Revolution is the starting point of the great revolution of the Islamic world under the banner of Imam Mahdi. May God expedite his reappearance. May God favor all Muslims and peoples of the world to set his reappearance in the current age." The Islamic Revolution apparently may look like other revolutions in the world, while it basically differs from them in its roots, process and leadership. This revolution was originated in people's deep Islamic beliefs. The conditions and process of this revolution were quite popular, and various poles of power in society had no role in it. Most importantly, the leader of this revolution was the most popular and loved religious figure among ulama or religious scholars, who was in a sense the representative of Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was the symbol of velayat-e faqih, or the God-given authority of supreme jurisprudence. The Imam did his best to show to the 20th century man that religion is capable of tackling and solving social issues. He revived the belief in the coming of the awaited savior of mankind, who will establish the government of justice and equality all over the world, and will remove oppression and tyranny. The coming of the Redeemer of mankind is a common belief in all heavenly religions and even in some other religions. Most religions wait for a divine human being who will reform mankind and set the ground for the perfection and sublimity. Hindus are waiting for Kalki. The belief in the savior in Buddhism is accompanied with the concept of Maitreya. Zoroastrians wait for Saoshyant. Jews wait for the Messiah, and Christians wait for Jesus Christ, peace be upon him. This waiting has created and protected the hope among individuals in a bright future. Islam, as the final divine religion, has discussed the concept more deeply, and Shia Muslims have explicated the issue in detail due to having access to the statements and hadith from the Holy Prophet and his infallible successors, blessings of God upon them. The Shia sources have talked about the characteristics of Imam Mahdi, may God expedite his return, and according to narrations, waiting for this Imam is the best deed of the faithful. Of course, waiting here means doing one's best to set the ground for Imam Mahdi's coming. According to the narrations and the interpretations of the Holy Quran, the 12th Imam's reappearance will be the greatest revolution in the world as it will cause fundamental changes in every aspect of human life. The Almighty says in verse 55 of Surah Nur, in the Holy Quran, Allah has promised those of you who have faith and do righteous deeds that He will surely make them successors in the earth, just as He made those before them successors, and He will surely establish for them their religion, which He has approved for them, and that He will surely change their state to security after their fear, while they worship Me, not ascribing any partner to Me. And whoever is ungrateful after that, it is they who are the transgressors. The great exegete of the Holy Quran in the 20th century, Allama Muhammad Hussein Tabatabai, writes about this ayah in the Holy Quran. Allama Tabatabai writes, God has promised the faithful who do righteous deeds that He will set up an appropriate society pure from unfaith, hypocrisy, and sedition. They will be the inheritors of the earth, and nothing will overcome their beliefs and deeds except the teachings of the rightful religion. They are in complete security, with no fear of the internal and external enemy. Such a pure society, with the sacred and valuable description, has not materialized ever since the raising of the noble prophet. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. And if we were to match them with an example with regards to the description that we have received from the highly repeated narrations of the noble prophet, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and the imams of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, on the age of reappearance of Imam Mahdi, it can be matched only with that society. The victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran was the turning point in the Islamic world and even in human history. This revolution symbolized the global waiting and call for the coming of the Redeemer. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, had determined the ultimate goal of the revolution far beyond changing the ruling system in Iran. Thus, from the very beginning, he addressed Muslims and the oppressed and downtrodden all over the world. In the last months of his blessed life, the Imam stressed the officials, Our officials must know that our revolution is not limited to Iran. The Iranian people's revolution is the starting point of the great revolution of the Islamic world, under the banner of Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his return. If economic and material issues dissuade the officials for a moment from their duty, it will bring about a great danger and a horrendous betrayal. The Islamic Republic government should exert its utmost on the best admiration of the people. But this does not mean to dissuade them from the great goals of the revolution, which is the establishment of the universal government of Islam.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
Islamic revolution in Iran as a deep popular revolution is comparable in its events and implications to the great revolutions that took place in the 20th century, especially the Russian and Chinese revolutions. However, the Islamic revolution was different in many aspects. In it, Islam was the charge of the nation's energies and the engine of it, and the revolutionary Islamic leadership was represented by late Ayatollah Imam Ruhollah Khomeini and the scholars who rallied around him, and most importantly, the masses. The entire population got involved in the revolution. It was not a class revolution, nor was it a military coup that made way for army generals to rule the country. It was by the people, for the people. No one denies that the Islamic Revolution overturned the scales at all local, regional, and international levels, where its effects have included all political, economic, and international fields, as well as cultural and social fields. Yet, what remains the most important achievement of the revolution is the establishment of the Islamic Republic, the establishment of Islamic governance, and providing full support to the axis of resistance across West Asia to liberate the usurped land from Zionist settler colonialism and to halt the greed of American imperialism in our region. What draws the forces of national liberation in the Arab and Islamic worlds towards the Islamic Revolution in Iran is their presentation of a progressive Islamic discourse in dealing with the issue of the struggle with American imperialism and the Zionist occupation. This made way for creating a post-revolution broad Islamic front to face the challenges of Zionist arrogance and Western hegemony, bringing to life the axis of resistance. This axis acted on the need to achieve Arab-Islamic solidarity to confront the giant blocs that are forming in the world. Since the invasion of Beirut in 1982, to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, up to the July War on Lebanon in 2006, to all aggressions against Gaza and the West Bank, and ending with the global terrorist war that has been going on in Syria for nearly 11 years, the American Zionist aggression supported by some Arab regimes has increased towards the countries and peoples of the region who reject the policies of American and Zionist hegemony. All these interconnected events confirm one fact. The resistance has become, in the eyes of the American and Zionist administrations, the most difficult obstacle to overcome for the birth of a new American Zionist Middle East. In realizing the magnitude of the danger that threatens the Islamic nation from the Zio-American presence, a minimum level of understanding, coordination, and cooperation between the resistance movements in the countries of the region became a force to be reckoned with, all thanks to the Islamic Revolution. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, I'm Marwa Osman. The Islamic Republic of Iran is preparing to commemorate the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution that broke out on February 11, 1979, as an important historical event of change throughout the Islamic world. The Islamic Revolution has been, since its victory, a very strong political and military support for the struggles of the axis of resistance across West Asia to liberate the usurped land from Zionist settler colonialism supported by the Zionists and to hold the greed of American imperialism in our region. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Hadi Qubaisi, director of the Union Center for Research and Development. It's a pleasure to have you on with us, Mr. Hadi. Now, one of the continuous achievements of the Islamic Revolution that took place in the Islamic Republic of Iran is the establishment of an Islamic system that provides full support for the axis of resistance that is fighting the Zionist entity in both occupied Palestine and in Lebanon. It also supports the fight, if you will, against terrorism in both Iraq and Syria, and it also supports the Yemeni people against the U.S.-Saudi-led aggression against Yemen that has been taking place since March 2015. Now, despite its own internal and external struggles, how was the Islamic Republic capable of pulling off this sort of regional support for the axis of resistance?
Iran is a strong country and an economically capable country. Iran possesses important resources, but in addition to these resources, it possesses a revolutionary vision. It provides support for the liberating forces in the region based on the capabilities available, and also on the fact that the movements that form the axis of resistance depend on human energy and are able to divert this investment, this support, and this assistance, which, if compared to the capabilities of the Western and Israeli sides, are very limited capabilities. But by the action of human energy, and by the action of the spirit of liberation, these forces possess the potential of employing these available capabilities and provide unexpected results that are many times greater than the value of resources that were devoted for this confrontation. This is exactly what happened during the war imposed on the Islamic Republic, where the principle of utilizing human energy in exchange for superior material resources.
Well, Mr. Hadi, enemies of the revolution and the axis of resistance, they claim that the resistance movement across West Asia is nothing but pawns in the hand of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm sure you've been asked these questions many times before. How do you respond to such an allegation, as if the axis of resistance is just a puppet in the hands of Iran?
Scientific studies on the issue of proxy powers agree that proxy relationships do not last more than 10 years. However, the relations between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the resistance movements in the region have lasted for 20, 30, and even 40 years in some cases. Researchers around the world realize that there are many studies that compare proxy states with the resistance axis states and recognize that this relationship is different and cannot be classified as a proxy or puppet relationship. There are also other studies that mention the experience of Haj Qasim Soleimani, which confirmed that Haj Qasim Soleimani was not an obliging director, but rather a coordinating director between the forces of the axis of resistance. And that fact gave flexibility and a large margin of freedom for the axis to confront other forces, be it Takfiri forces, the Israeli occupation, or the Americans in our region. These powers arose as a result of an external invasion, and their activity was a direct response to this external invasion. How can it be a tool for another entity while defending its people who have been subjected to invasion or external aggression? When we talk about tools, we mean those in the position of taking action or initiative for the benefit of a foreign country, and this is not the case here. We also know that the American project within the Islamic Republic of Iran promotes the claim that Iran has not benefited economically from these resistance movements abroad, and that it has not benefited in any way from any of the liberation movements it supports in the region. Furthermore, some Iranian academics who are influenced by the Western system and are connected to it explicitly say that Iran does not have a proxy, and that right there is Iran's problem in their eyes. In reality, Iran has partners and allies. It does not have a proxy force serving its direct economic interest. So there is confusion in this claim, and there are many scientific opinions and contradictions within the Western sphere who define these forces as proxy ones or puppets, or that they belong directly to the Islamic Republic.
Well, something that's very interesting is that the Iranian revolution took place to achieve the programs of Islam in fighting the tyranny practiced by the Shah, and in fighting the tyrannical class differences that happened during the Shah time, in fighting global Zionism and American imperialism, and calling for the liberation of Palestine at the heart of it all, especially Al-Quds al-Sharif. Now, however, the Arab position, when compared to the Iranian one, is not at the same level of principle, if I may. I mean, especially against the Zionist occupation. What main principle drives the Islamic Republic of Iran to maintain animosity with the Zionist occupation in Palestine and when it was also in Lebanon?
There are political and strategic reasons, and there are religious, humanitarian, and moral reasons in the Islamic Republic's handling of this particular issue. These reasons coincide with each other. On the strategic level, when the Islamic Revolution in Iran was victorious in 1979 and the regime was changed from the Shahanshahi regime to an Islamic one, Iran raised a slogan based on its principles and values, which is the slogan, neither East nor West, but an Islamic Republic. Within this position, only those affected by the existing international system, which was at the time the bipolar system, those who stood beside Iran were the marginalized and the oppressed, such as the Palestinian people, the Lebanese people, and others who were subjected to Israeli oppression, and no one in this world helped them. These were the only potential allies of the Islamic Republic, along with Syria and all the resistance forces. So this political motive reflects that the Islamic Republic has no real allies except those who are oppressed. Secondly, with regard to the religious and human moral aspect of the Iranian position, which Imam Khomeini enshrined since the start of his revolution in 1962 in his first speeches, when he spoke about the liberation of Palestine and the right of the Palestinians to return to their country. Of course, around the world there is a lot of support for the Palestinian cause, even that some normalizing countries support the Palestinian cause. But the Shia teachings oblige the need to defend the vulnerable who are subjected to persecution, killing and displacement in the way Palestinians suffer. Here we notice the intersection between the ideological level with the strategic level and the congruence of results in this path for this issue in particular.
Well, it's a pleasure always hearing what you have to say, especially about how the Islamic Revolution was the gateway to the axis of resistance in West Asia. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Hadi Qubaisi, Director of the Union Center for Research and Development, for your time and contribution, especially that I know that you're fasting today. So thank you very much for being with us and giving us your energy for this matter. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking how the axis of resistance is going to be part of the New World Order.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
We currently live in the era of the United States of America obsessed with changing the world order. Yet we must emphasize that what the resistance has done during the past decades is more than that, basically 30 years of confrontation, heroism, sacrifices, dismantling and thwarting American projects in Lebanon, Syria, in Iraq, even in Palestine, has contributed significantly in weakening the influence of the United States of America in West Asia. Now, the features of the New World Order began to appear, and this system is no longer a monolithic one. And in our region, the axis of resistance led by the Islamic Republic's revolution have a pivotal and fundamental role at the level of the regional equation of this new world order. More in this following report.
Resistance after the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran held a different situation and even possessed a different definition. Resistance has become part of the equations that preoccupy the minds of global political leaders and the interests of thinkers, commentators, and researchers. Since the victory of the revolution, a lot has been written to try to understand this revolution and the resistance produced by the movement of the Iranian people. How did this act come to be? What is the role of leadership? What is the role of belief? How the Shah's regime fell? How the United States of America failed to protect the Shah? And why the United States did not expect this resistance to flourish inside Iran? After that, questions began to be asked about the resistance movements outside Iran. How did the Islamic Republic support the resistance in the region, in Lebanon, Palestine, and elsewhere? And what is the relationship of this to Iran's position on supporting the oppressed in the world? And what is the relationship of the resistance in Iran to the resistance across West Asia? And what influence does Iran have in this resistance in the face of the Zionist occupation? All these questions were raised in Western, American, Zionist, and even Islamic circles that support the resistance and support the experience of the Islamic Republic. In the past years, the resistance has made great achievements and has been exposed to great threats and pressures, especially inside Iran, the main support for the Axis of Resistance. However, the Axis of Resistance is a modern term, and a few years ago, this term began to be used to express Iran's central role in the Axis, whose function is to confront American hegemony, America's allies in the region, and the Zionist entity in Palestine. The experience of the United States in exerting the harshest pressure on Iran did not lead to the West's desired results. The United States wanted, through the strategy of maximum pressure, to oblige Iran to back down from supporting the resistance in the region, from confronting American hegemony, and from developing a progressive and economic resistance. All these pressures failed. Iran continued to support resistance movements in the region from Yemen to Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and Palestine. Today, anyone who thinks about the future of the region must take into consideration the role of Iran and the Axis of Resistance. Despite all the developments and wars that took place in the region, the positive results produced by these developments and wars on the peoples and countries of the Axis of Resistance have great importance and impacts that will shape the geopolitical reality in the region. The features of the New World Order began to appear. Its system is no longer a monolithic system, and the Axis of Resistance that emerged as a direct result of the Islamic Revolution is a key partner in the New World Order and has a pivotal and fundamental role at the level of the regional equation.
To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Julia Qasim, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us. Now, what was planned by the American and the West in general? It all collided with the steadfastness of the Axis of Resistance and its victories, whether in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, or across Palestine, as we have been seeing, especially over the past 3 years, which impeded the laid plans and it disrupted many of the conspiracies that the West has for our region. With the current global tension, though, do you think that the U.S. can still afford some sort of military tricks that it can try again in our region?
Well, for the U.S., Afghanistan and Iraq put that nail in the coffin. And for its allies, 2006, the Israeli defeat in Lebanon, as well as the Saudi defeat in Yemen, have really validated that, for the U.S.'s closest allies. So in this new stage of warfare, post-2016 RAND Corporation reports, have also emphasized that hybrid warfare is the new strategy because the U.S. knows that it has lost so much ground and so much of its investment in military warfare. And even its military capabilities are not at all what they were before. They cannot find suitable personnel in their army. They've lost so much from their investments militarily. That it is clearly a losing battle, and this is what defines and what has really motivated the focus and the shift towards economic warfare, hybrid warfare, and even soft war.
Well, that's exactly what I want to talk about, because the resistance states, which America is defining, describing as rogue states, and the real resistance movements, which America describes as terrorism, hello there, form the nucleus of a major resistance to the hegemony of the West, and cooperation between these states and movements. It also added momentum to the liberation movement in West Asia and the Arab world in general. However, the West still claims an effective weapon reflected by economic and fiscal pressure, what you just mentioned right now. What steps do you think can be taken by this axis of resistance, by these states that say no to American hegemony, to try and bypass this new and very effective weapon?
Well, because of a lot of the U.S.'s economic power, what was bolstered by its defense industry, the damage that has been done to the U.S. military from the successful campaigns of resistance and to its allies have also impacted it economically. The Treasury Chair Janet Yellen has been saying that the U.S. is headed towards a financial catastrophe. We see the dollar losing its ground and its standing. And this is because of the failure of the U.S. and its allies militarily that this is now precipitating towards economic impacts and effects. Nonetheless, the U.S. is really pushing hard on using the hegemony and the standing that it has had since the 70s economically worldwide to pressure, sanction, and basically do a lot of damage to countries that are adversarial to its hegemony. We see that even being invalidated with the turn eastward and the alliance of new multipolar forces that are now establishing economic relations based on fairness, on cooperation with global South states that are finally freeing themselves of the crushing economic impact of Western and U.S.-specific hegemony economically, which the U.S. has historically used as a weapon against disobedience. But it's increasingly becoming invalidated by initiatives like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, large multipolar powers like Russia, like China, like Iran, all across Latin America.
Such cooperation can actually be applied at the level of West Asia.
It already is, and at least West Asia can join forces with larger multipolar powers to basically free themselves of the impacts of economic dependency and of the impacts of economic punishment of the U.S. Economic hegemonic project.
Well, we are facing also the formation of a new world order, as everyone is speaking about it right now, and the resistance, as it contributed to its formation, will undoubtedly be an active part of that new world order and a balancing pole among many of its poles across the world. Yet the Zionist entity still represents a stumbling block in the road of regional resistance, regional peace, if I may. How do you see the position of the Zionist occupation being affected by this new world order just now, as we also see the entire world is trying to make itself open doors into World War III, and with big doors being opened like this, I don't know where that would put the Zionist entity, where think they will be headed to?
Well, the Zionist entity historically was bolstered by Western political power and Western U.S., British, European economic and military hegemony and support. There was a symbiotic relationship between itself and the West as a neo-colonial entity that serves the West in being a expanding U.S. base in the region. But because of the symbiotic relationship between the economic and the military hegemony of the U.S., and likewise the relationship that we could see happening between both its decline in those areas, puts the Zionist entity in a very precarious situation. So while the Zionist entity itself wants to maintain relations with these multipolar powers, there is an existential crisis that it faces as an illegal occupation present in the region when the premise of its existence is threatened by this emerging multipolar order.
Mm-hmm. Well, added to that, the new wave of resistance that's actually sweeping through the occupation, you think that we are actually witnessing the crumbling down of the occupation from within, or is it just wishful thinking at the moment?
It's not wishful thinking. It's within in the sense that the resistance is directly putting a end to this occupation. Through the biggest threat to the Zionist entity, in addition to the external factors of declining Western and U.S. Hegemony, is the success of the resistance regionally and also in occupied Palestine. Since the deal of the century 2-3 years ago had crumbled, the Zionist entity has attempted to ramp up its settlement expansion, its brutality against the Palestinians. Every day this year alone, which has just begun, there have been more deaths from the Zionist raid, specifically on Jenin and throughout the West Bank. Then there have been days in the year. But at the same time, it's a testament to how successful this wave of resistance has been, that has been more unified than ever since the Operation Sword and Shield in May 2021. We have seen countless examples of how strong and how threatening and how successful these resistance operations, these groups have been in further accelerating the crumbling, eventually, of this occupation.
Well, from your mouth to the gates of heaven, my dear Julia Qasim, thank you very much, political commentator Julia Qasim, for being with us to discuss this issue, especially the issue of the resistance axis in West Asia taking a big role in the New World Order. Ladies and gents, I want to thank you very much. I really enjoyed this episode of the Mideast Stream. We promise you to give you like this episode every week. Thank you for following the Mideast Stream. We'll see you again next week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.
The Limelight.
A new poll shows that Americans think the government is the nation's top problem. Over a slew of issues such as inflation, the southern border after the chaotic start to new Congress. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more.